access number 27796 for Dairy Irons Reel 3. Now we'd like to look at your first operation, and this is on the 10th of September 1942, when you go with Flight Lieutenant Stubbs as mid-upper gunner to Dusseldorf. 4 hours and 15 minutes, target found and bombed. That's all it says in the log. You just explain that you don't put much in the log.
That's right.
Now, would this be a good one to use as a typical raid, or do you remember that this raid?
I do remember it, yeah, the first raid.
Well, should we look at this as a typical raid, as a raid, right from the start? How would you first know that you were going on a raid? How were you notified that there was going to be a raid?
Well, we used to have what they call restrooms around the hangars, the crew. Most of the gunners would be in their section, the bomb aimers in their section, and the pilots in their section. And there'd be a call, all crews to report to the intelligence room, probably about 1:30, 2:30. Right, it was all amble over. There was not a lot of discipline in, not on the bomber command. It was all amble over. Some had scarves on, some had no ties on. You just amble over to the intelligence and all sit in this big room. All the crews were picked for that raid. We'd be sitting there, and the CO had come in.
Carry on.
The CO had come in with the intelligence officer and the fellow who does the weather, and a couple of AD cams with him. And he'd get on this platform in front of us, and there'd be a big sheet on the wall right in front of you. Then all of a sudden, one of the police, you know, the SPs, had whipped the cover off of the board, and there you're seeing the target, Dusseldorf. And you see the route in and the route out. Then the intelligence officer would explain to you the flak, which you've got to avoid going in, and the flak, what you're going to hit coming out. Then you get the weather bloke get up, he'll tell you what the weather's like, if you could believe him. And then you get the gunnery officer get up and say what he thought of what the fighters are going to see and what wasn't going to see, and what the fuel load was, and what the bomb, how much bombing, how many bombs we're going to take. And then we'd all amble off back to the mess, and we'd have a big turnout. We'd have bacon and eggs. We all got bacon and eggs before we took off. Then we'd amble down to the aerodrome. We'd go on to the...
Now, would you have done any flying tests beforehand, or was a pilot?
Oh, beg your pardon, yeah. We had a 30-minute air test.
Now, would you all go up with that?
Oh, yeah, everybody. All the whole crew would go up on the air test.
And what was an air test?
It was just a matter of taking off, checking guns, checking the bomb sights, testing the engines. Sometimes we used to feather a couple of engines and, see that was going all right. And navigate to check his, because we had no radar or nothing then. You can't remember, mostly it was only just map reading then, because it was the early stages of the war. And the engineer checked the petrol tanks, see that everything was right, and we'd lift the undercarriage up now and again on the flight, come in and land, and that would be it. That could take about 30 minutes. Now, then we knew we was on a raid.
Can we talk a bit about the role of your ground crew? Did you have what was the ground crew? What did they do for you?
Well, that was very good, really, because they used to, I'll tell you what, they used to wait for us when we come back. They didn't have to, but they used to wait for us to come back, all the crew.
What did they do for you? What was their job?
Well, their job was just to maintain the aircraft, just make sure the engines were not going well. We used to look after our own guns, the gunners, and the bomb aim and stuff. General, looking after the aircraft in general.
Would you have one team on your aeroplane?
Yeah, one team all the time, yeah.
And did you get? I mean, did you trust them? Did you get on well with them?
Oh yeah, we got on. Yeah, there was no discipline. You know, everybody mixed in. They used to come in and talk to you and have a chat with you.
Yeah. So you've you've had your meal, egg and bacon, or whatever it was, and what happened then?
Then we'd wait for the, what they call the vans. The WAFs used to drive these vans. They took us out to the, where all our gear was stored, in the hangar. They had big cupboards for all our flying gear. And that's when, and that's when it started. Because, don't forget, this was my, just my first raid. But the atmosphere, you could cut with a knife. Everybody was looking at each other and wondering who was going to come back. Literally. You made it, was deadly silence in there. No laughing or joking about all these films. Everybody knew that somebody wasn't going to come back. Nearly every raid.
And how did you feel inside? How nervous were you? How
well, this first time, my first raid, I didn't know. I knew, I was a bit apprehensive because I knew it was going this way, but I didn't realise what it was all about. I'm telling you, I never realised. And we had some coffee, and I think there goes a few sweets to take with us.
Now, what was your flying kit that you picked up? Go through with what you'd be wearing.
I'll tell you what I had.
Your uniform as well. What clothes were you wearing?
Well, first of all, I had a silk underwear on. And then I had a very heavy sweater. Electrical suit. Electrical heating suit. Fur line Irvine jacket. Fur line Irvine trousers. And fur-lined boots, three pair of gloves, and the leather gloves over the top. Because then you had your electrical heated gloves over your two pair of gloves.
So you picked that. You were picking this up from your from the hangars.
Yeah. then your what's called went on your May West, and then your harness.
Your parachute.
Parachute harness.
And what about your helmet?
Your helmet you had on the back of your head, ready to put on, ready to place on.
And that'd have your intercom.
Earphone and intercom on it as well, yeah.
So what next? You're picking it, very tense, picking this kit up.
Yeah, you are tense. You pick it up and you wait for what they used to call the carry, your bus to take you out to your aircraft. And when we got the aircraft, the bomb doors were open. And you could see your line of bombs. Probably to the Ruhr Valley, we'd probably be taking a 4,000 pounder and probably about 1,600 incendiaries. And that'd be the bomb load. The engineer would go around here, check the bomb load, check the wheels, and generally look around the aircraft. The pilot would be standing there. We'd all be puffing away like the clappers, all smoking.
And would you check your guns, or would you fit your guns?
Yeah,
were the guns fitted already, or would you fit them?
No, the guns are already fitted. We've already been out previously and made sure, because we used to have a board with red dots on it, and we used to realign our guns every time we flew. You'd put this board at 200 yards, and you used to look through the barrel of the machine gun, and you made sure you got that machine gun hole spot onto the dot of the board. Then you know your guns were already ready to go. Then you check your servo feed, because the rear turret, the ammunition was in the fuselage, in boxes, and it used to be pulled along on a servo feed, electric motor, used to pull the ammunition up to the guns. The mid-upper had his guns, had his ammunition, actually just at the side of the turret, either side of his turret. Then we'd go in and...
Now, were you a superstitious crew? Did you have any last superstitions?
Well, the bomb aimer, he had... Some used to say they'd piddle on the wheels and all that, but we never done that. But we was very, very quiet, I can assure you.
So you didn't have a lucky anything?
No, not really. Some did, some had little bits and pieces with them, some had scarves, some had silk stockings, you know, but it didn't mean a lot, really.
So, you got in your plane, what happened then?
And that's when the problem, well, that's not the problem. You're going to wonder, and you're going to take off. You've got a full bomb load, full petrol load, and we was on grass runways. We had no runways, just had grass. and the you had plenty of rain that night. It was very, very difficult to take off. Anyway, this pilot, I said, was a very, very experienced man. And we used to whip the wheels up. Well, he whipped the wheels up pretty sharp when we took off. And then we used to circle the drone, and the navigator would give us our course, our first course, which was probably off of Norfolk there. There's a big lighthouse there, and I think that was our first point of call going across the channel.
Now, were you flying independently within a bomber stream? Or
no, you're flying independent. You never flew, you had the stream, but you was independent. There was no formation flying, nothing.
Now, a couple of things I ought to have asked is, one, did you have, in these early days, did you have an escape kit that to take?
Oh, you had an escape kit.
Tell me about that.
Well, that consisted of drugs, water purifying tablets, and I think it was about £30 foreign currency.
Maps?
Pardon?
Maps?
Oh, and a silk map, yeah. But they were sealed, I'm going to say, you couldn't mess it. They were in a sort of plastic case. I don't think it was plastic then, it was the stuff they used to use then. But it was a clear little box, but it was sealed. And but I used to get one of those every. But on top of that, I forgot to tell you, before we took off, the parson, the vicar, used to come round with his little white tablets. They used to call them wakey-wakey tablets. I don't know if they were or not, but they said they were supposed to keep you awake. I don't know if they were that or they're not. Some I've spoken to people since, and they said there was probably speed.
Amphetamines, yeah.
Yeah.
Which we'd call a drug now.
Yeah.
Did you take them?
We used to take them, yeah.
And
yeah.
Did they make a difference?
Well, it used to keep us awake anyway. Because you imagine in that tarry, you're in that tarry sometimes 8 or 9 hours at a time. And another thing, if you want to go to the toilet, it was out of the question.
Now, did they have the L-sand?
I had the L-sand.
And what was an L-sand? I mean,
well, I'll tell you what, it was a bucket with a chemical in it. So if anybody went and got a toilet, the chemical used to more or less dissolve it. But what they didn't tell you was that that thing used to come adrift somewhere. If you got in violent gunfire, that used to come adrift. And you can imagine all that lot going all up the fuselage. That's what used to happen there. That's why we never used to use them if we could help it.
Now, so you've taken off, and you're on. What next? What would you be doing as a mid-upper? You're mid-upper on this.
I was mid-upper at the start.
So what would you do as mid-upper gunner?
Well, what I'll be doing, I'll be swinging the turret round all the time, because you never know who was underneath you or was under. Because, as I said, we flew individually, but then again, there's always that chance of a collision, especially after takeoff. And the rear turret, he'd wait till he got out to sea, and we'd give a little quick burst with the guns to see if it was working all right.
So you'd sweep the sky,
yeah,
with your turret?
Even when we're over our country, we used to sweep the sky. Yeah.
So you'd go round and round in it?
Yeah. And the rear turret was in contact with each other, and we knew exactly what was going to go on. But you had to watch. You had to watch the sky underneath you and right beside you, because there were so many aircraft in that short distance of time, all flying them more or less at the same height.
So there was as much, other than risk of being attacked by German fighters, it was risk
collision.
Of collision.
Yeah. And of course we all made our way to the point on the Cromer, I think it was Cromer, yeah. We all go to Cromer. And then we set sail from there. And we've been climbing, steadily climbing. And the first experience of flak was on the Dutch coast.
And what was it like the first time?
Well, I couldn't believe what I see. This was on the Dutch coast. I couldn't believe the amount of shells that were coming up.
What did it look like? What was it?
Colour, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful colours. Every colour in the rainbow. And it was fascinating to watch. And you could see it coming up, and as it went past you, it shot past you. Mm. there's hundreds and thousands of them firing at you. And that was on the Dutch coast. And then from there, we headed straight through to Düsseldorf. And I turned to him, shock of my life. I never realised that searchlights are coming on. And it's just one mass, as you looked from my turret, heading for it, was just one solid mass of explosions. And you got to fly through that.
How did you feel?
Well, I was getting a bit bit terrified, and I tell you, the first time as well. Because the rear turret, he couldn't see it so much as what I could. And then you've got to watch. Then you say, bomb doors open.
Now hang on, so no sign of any night fighters?
Not at the moment.
Not yet.
It wasn't so bad then with the night fighters, actually. It wasn't so bad, because it was the early stages.
So what about the approach to the target? Anything special about that? That's when you got the worst of the flak, I think.
Yeah. Searchlights. Searchlights everywhere.
What were the searchlights like? Were they coding it? I mean,
they had what they called a master. That was blue. And once that master hit you, that was on radar, that was. Once that hit you, you'd had it, because you'd be coned by about 10 or 15 other searchlights. And once they got you in that cone, unless you was very, very good and lucky, you'd had it. Because the fighters would come after you, if not that flak, they pinpoint you. And you could see them blowing up. You'd actually see the aircraft flying up in the searchlights. And that was in the run-in. Then you had to watch for somebody dropping bombs on you from above. As you're going into bomb, there'll probably be somebody above you ready to bomb as well. And he's not looking, and he's dropping them, and you had to watch them as well. And of course you had to watch for collisions as well, because there'd be about 200 or 300 of you all diving on that target at the same time.
So what happens next then?
Well, after you made your bombing run, what we done anyway, we used to slam the doors shut.
What was it? Explain what would happen when you dropped the bombs.
Well, we'd go up a lot. We know we'd drop the bombs, because we'd go up about 200 or 300 feet, just like a lift.
And could you see them falling?
No, not really. No, but you could see. You could see over the side. You could see the incendiaries burning on the ground, and you could see the explosions of bombs.
Did you have any qualms at all? I mean, you'd been bombed. But did you have any qualms at all about civilians, things like that?
I don't think it entered any of their mind, anybody there. It was just a job to do at the time, and that was it. I don't think there was any qualms about bombing the civilians. It was either them or us. That's all it was.
So what next?
Well, after we dropped our bombs, We used to put the thing into a dive to get out of the target area, because that was very dangerous, see, I tell you. Very, very dangerous. But on top of that, as you left the target, you had other towns nearby. Because there's all a string of towns there on the Ruhr Valley there. They'd all open up on you as well. Anyway, once you got out of the Ruhr Valley, you felt a sign of relief. But then you got the fighters. But at that time, I'm talking that period of time, there wasn't so many of them. There wasn't so many night fighters. There were a few about, but not as many as what they were at the end of 42, 43.
So you didn't see any on this raid, your first raid?
No, not my first raid, no. I never see any at all. But the flak was ferocious, I tell you. If you were up there yourself and see approaching that, we were from a distance. It was just solid explosions in the sky. And then...
On the way back as well?
On the way back, we hit the Dutch coast again. And we got a good thump in there. And occasionally, there'd be strings of AKAC batteries, you know, on the way in and way out, but it'd be firing at you as well. Then what we used to do, after we left the target, we used to start diving. To get below 10,000 feet, so we could take our oxygen mask off. And then we used to go over the Dutch coast, and that was terrible, because they had hundreds of these light flak 20 millimeter guns there, and I was waiting for you. And then we headed straight over the sea back and landed. Well, tried to land. But that was a bit of a dodgy there, because there'd be about 20 or 30 other bombers all flying around the same area, same circle, all trying to get in at the same time.
Now, what about debriefing?
Debriefing is, once you land, I'll tell you, by then we was knackered, I'll tell you what. It was exhausted, there's no doubt about it. It was absolutely exhausted. What with the going through that flak and the fighters, or well, there weren't so many fighters in, but getting there and back. Anyway, debriefing, we used to go into the debriefing room. There was an officer there, intelligence officer, and he said, and we'd have a table, they'd give us a cup of coffee, and they would tell me exactly what happened. And they'd build up a picture of the actual raid. And then we'd go and we'd have, from there we'd go and we'd have a kip and wait for the next day, see what happens.
Would there be another breakfast? You know, I mean...
We get back, we get a break. Yeah, when we got back, we got a meal. Yeah, we have a coffee, and then we'd go in the mess and we'd have a meal. There'd be bacon and egg waiting for us. We'd have that, and then we'd all creep upstairs. We was upstairs in the mess.
Was the crew breakfast, this business of bacon and eggs, before and after, was that a trip? It always seems to have been bacon and eggs, was that?
That's about it, yeah. I don't think they made a change anywhere else, but usually, well, eggs were so scarce, nobody got eggs in those days. But they gave them air crew, that was the, when they gave all air crew. Always gave them a breakfast, and pre-flight meal.
So that was your first raid. Anything else you remember about it? I mean, you remembered a fair bit there, but... That was 4.25 hours worth.
I tell you what, how we ever went over, I don't know. I can't believe it now, even how we ever went over. Even on that first raid, when I see what was going through. Anyway, I had a good night's kip and I didn't feel so bad next morning.
Now, what would you do on, you know, in between raids? You know, you've got a day in between. What was the sort of...
On the airdrome.
Yeah, well, firstly, tell me about your accommodation. I mean, what
I was in the sergeant's mess. There were two of us in the room. Me and the engineer, Parrington, we shared a room together. And we'd go down in the morning.
Was it in a hut?
No, in the officer's mess. In the sergeant's mess, a proper brick-built sergeant's mess, pre-war one.
What was your room like?
Not bad. Two of us in the room. It's about... From there to about here. Only small room, but there's two beds in there.
About 10-foot square.
Yeah, yeah.
And comfortable furniture?
A couple of beds, probably a chair in it, that's all.
Now, what did the sergeant's mess offer for you? What was the food like?
Well, it was wartime, you know, I remember, and the best they could do, I think. I wouldn't say it was all that marvellous, but it wasn't too bad, I suppose. But the bacon and eggs, that was the meal. We'd never see other unless we were flying anyway.
And what would you do during the day? What would your duties be like?
Might do some clay pigeon shooting. We might be taking trip, might be doing practice flights, might be taking up aircraft to see a lot of the flying I never put in, like the training, like we used to take up aircraft to see if they was all right. After they'd been serviced, we'd take them out and test them out. And we'd do a bit of gunnery. We'd go and do a bit of... fighter affiliation, and that was it. The day seemed to go.
Now, what about?
There's a lot of drinking down there.
Oh, well, I was just coming to drinking in the evening. Now, where would you drink? Would you drink in the mess, or would you go
drink
to the pub?
Well, mostly. It all depends where you were flying. If we was on a raid, and it was postponed at the last minute, we'd all go in the mess, and everybody get blind drunk. I tell you, everybody would get blind drunk.
What would you drink?
Only beer, mostly beer.
And what level of drinking? I mean, blind drunk. You know, people get drunk after 4 pints, or people get drunk after 12.
Well, I used to get drunk after about 2 pints, but a lot of them used to knock it back. My bomb mate, I'm sure he used to go on the raids after drunk, positive. But he used to drink a lot of Guinness. And if not, we used to go into the village. If there was no flying at all, what they called a stand down through bad weather. We'd go in the village in the pub there and have a few beers.
Now, what was it like in the pub? What was the atmosphere like in the pub? You see it in films, but tell us what it was like.
Well, as you see in films, yeah. Everybody was drunk, everybody was screaming and shouting, and that was it. Everybody knew that their length of time wasn't very, very long, I can assure you.
Now, you had a girlfriend, did you? Did that worry you?
Well, not really.
You weren't married then, were you?
No. No. But there's nothing. It was a. You can't describe the life on Bomber Command. Because you never know. You never know when your time is up. Never.
But did that worry you with having a girlfriend? Or
no, not really. No. Yeah. Mind you, we've got a hell of a lot of leave. We've got 3 weeks leave. Regular. Every 3 weeks, we've got a week off. They paid, you know, paid your fare home as well. And, Lord, who was the one who ran the British Morris Car Company? He gave every air crew a week's wages every time they went on leave. Lord,
I can't think of it. Don't worry too much.
He gave every air crew, Bomber Command, a week's wages every time they went on leave. Extra week's wage. He paid for that. Can't think of his name.
And you just go, what would you do? Go back home or where would
I'd go back home and see Kit and that was it. Have a week off and then come back and start again.
Now, what about the other raids? I don't know how well you remember these raids, but are there any raids you remember in particular? I mean, there's Dustoff was your first. And then you went to Brenman, Will Harms, and
there's all.
I mean, just tell us about anything you remember in particular on those raids. Right?
Well, these were just. This one I remember.
What's
mostly.
That? Now that's on.
We only got an hour there, but that was Essen. We took off with a full bomb load. It was at 18,000 feet, and we lost 4 engines.
What, your aircraft lost?
Yeah, we lost the. I've got it in the book.
And tell us what happened.
The 4 engines just cut on us. We were 18,000 feet with a full bomb load.
Now, what happened though?
Well, what happened, the engineer was very quick and he switched the engines onto inner fuel tanks and they started up again. Then two packed up. On the starboard, he managed to get them two going again, and the other two packed up on the port side. And we managed to get them going again, and we decided that there's no good carrying on because the engines would keep on. We couldn't use the outer tanks of petrol, so we dropped our bombs in the sea and came home.
So you aborted the raid?
Yeah. And that don't count. It doesn't count. That's not that you don't can't include that in your total. This was Brainman. We know that was heavily defended.
What you remember? That's a bit early. It's best we keep in order. But that's
Brainman.
Essen was the 16th of September. Brainman was the 13th.
13th. Yeah.
What you remember about Brainman?
The only thing I remember about it is just seeing the docks as we went in. But it was very heavy flak. But lucky enough with Brainman, at least we'd come in from the sea. So the only time we hit the flak was when we hit Brainman. And you see the pattern of the things. We went to Wilhelmshaven, that's further up, because of the U-boats. It was after the U-boats.
Remember anything about that?
No, not really. It's just that it's the same sort of thing. We come in from the sea. But it was heavy flak over the area, but once we got out of the town and back on the sea, was all right.